Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Desi White of Coramdale Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're wrapping up our conversation on the seven deadly sins with the topic of pride.
Mike, C.S. Lewis wrote, "This is one vice of which no man in the world is free." So when we talk about pride today, we're not talking about something that other people struggle with. We're talking about something that you, listener, struggle with, as well as all of us. And so this is one of those topics that rather than saying, how do I see this in other people? We probably need to start with the question, all right, where is this in myself and how do I begin to become aware of it? We sort of thought we'd subdivide the conversation, guys, into three questions. What is pride? How do I spot pride? And then what do I do about it? So let's maybe start with the question, what is it? How do we begin to get our minds around what it is? Mike, what is pride?
Pride is the view or perspective of self that where you raise yourself higher than you actually are.
Yeah. Essence of pride is self-exaltation. It's the original sin that Satan committed, right? Wanting to be higher than God. And really when it manifests itself in our hearts, it's always putting ourselves above God, above others. That's the essence of what pride is. Now, you might think of it too as just self-concern. When I'm consumed with myself, when I'm concerned with myself, that's usually the indicator that pride is making itself known in my disposition. The interesting thing is there's some different contours to pride. I think it's one of those things that we can all abstractly say, well, yes, pride is a problem among humans, but it's sometimes harder to tease out the nuances. I think for us, another thing C.S. Lewis says is this is always easy to spot in other people and we're always blind to it in ourselves. And he says the people who are the most prideful are the people who hate pride most in other people. Like, so if it really bothers you when other people are prideful, that's not good because it usually means, according to C.S. Lewis, that you've got some serious arrogance in your own soul that that makes that a problem for you.
You would think that, you know, if you're making yourself higher, you know, if you're self-exalting yourself, you'd be aware of that. You think you would be, but you're right. Sometimes you're the least aware of how you're doing that and most aware of other people. It's interesting.
So I'm going to read some phrases from Peter Crave to... again, is wise in these areas. He makes some interesting points in his book, Back to Virtue, that I think help us think about pride. First of all, he says, pride is not the same as vanity. He said, vanity, though it's a sin, shows a little bit of humility because at least I want people to admire me. And so that shows that I don't think I'm the greatest because I need some sort of affirmation or approval from people. He says the truly proud person is the person who couldn't care less what others think. The other point he makes is that pride isn't thinking too highly of yourself, but rather pride is a sin of the will. So it's willing your own desires above others, not just thinking of yourself too high. Thinking of yourself too highly is more what vanity would be like. You know, I think I'm a pretty important person, but pride is a willing kind of a sin. And so it's a sin that asserts my will above others. He says it this way: movie stars are vain, dictators are proud, which is an interesting way to think about the difference between those two. Another interesting answer to the question, what is pride, is to acknowledge that it has different manifestations. So I think it's easiest for us to think of the person who's really arrogant, and we recognize that person as prideful, the sort of really into myself, self-glorifying kind of person. That's maybe the most familiar face of pride, but pride also manifests itself in maybe a fear-driven way. As we call it the difference between arrogant pride and fearful pride. So fearful pride is a self-concern that rather than manifesting itself in, I think I'm better than others or I'm willing my desires above others, more in a negative way or a self-loathing way, or I'm self-concerned in a way that's always comparing myself to others and concerned about whether I measure up and wanting them to see me in a certain way. In fact, the way Peter Kreef puts it is that pride and despair are twin brothers. There's a secret pride in despair, a tragic grandeur, an overweening claim unfulfilled. So he sees despair, people that are really despairing, that's just a sister manifestation of pride, because it's really, you think of it as the tortured artist who's can't imagine why they're not famous, because of course everybody should be, if everybody just knew their music, they'd be famous. But since they don't, I'm sort of the despairing, starving artist. No one understands me. Kind of a disposition. That's an example of that sort of pride, where it doesn't manifest itself as I'm the greatest, but more as like, why am I not the greatest? I'm despairing. Yeah. I'm discouraged by people not seeing me the way I think they ought to.
Going back to what we said a bit ago about, those that are most prideful probably spot out, you can find pride in other people. How do we point out pride in other people in a humble way? How do we be self-aware of where we're at, but also help people see the pride in their life, the sin, the self-exaltation of other people humbly?
Maybe we need to first of all answer the question, how do we see it in ourselves?
Yeah, okay, sure.
Because there's, I can't remember who it was that said this. I want to say Matthew Henry. The quote is something to the effect of, those people will not be skillful keepers of others' vineyards who haven't learned to keep their own.
Yeah.
So it's that idea of, until I'm well aware of how pride manifests itself in me and have done battle with it, I probably am not going to be helpful to others, either in helping them see it or helping them see it in a way that's humble and helpful. Mm-hmm. So I think probably it starts with just asking the question, what does pride look like in me? Where am I self-willing, self-concerned, self-absorbed, self-exalting, self-promoting? What does that sin of self look like in me actually? When I've done battle with that in my own heart, it always makes me more gentle and generous in helping others see it, because I can come not from just, hey dude, you're prideful, here's how I know.
Yeah.
But hey, here's my own struggle with pride, and therefore because I've wrestled with this in my own heart, I see some tendencies in you that maybe you want to confront or be aware of as well. So the question you're asking is a really good question. I think it always starts with, it's never helpful to me for people to point out pride when they haven't wrestled with it in their own hearts and therefore can speak from wisdom and insight of, hey, here's what it's looked like in me. Mm-hmm. Here's how I see it manifesting maybe differently in you.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy for us to spot pride and arrogance in other people. Mike, to your question, I think the thing that comes to mind is you don't want to help people in their pride in a prideful way, right? Which would be a domineering, controlling kind of, hey, let me get at your pride here, because that's just not going to be received well. But if you do it with the opposite of pride, which is gentleness and meekness and humility, then you might actually have a voice. And I think it does come out of experience. And I think the reason it's easier to spot in other people arrogance and pride is because internally we've struggled with it. Right. And so we spot things that are familiar to us. And so I think this is the trickiness of this actual sin is not answering it with more sin, but coming in with humility.
Yeah. This seems to be wise counsel for anybody dealing with any type of sin with other people, whether you're a gospel community leader or a pastor or a parent, to always enter into those conversations, taking into account your own heart, taking into account where you're at, maybe with that specific sin, or just where, the attitude you're coming into that conversation, because you could do a lot of damage or you could do a lot of good depending on how you enter into those conversations.
I'm actually, as I was thinking about your question, I don't think there's that many people that struggle with pride in the way that we most normally think of it. I think for most people, the way their pride manifests itself is in more that fearful, self-loathing, despairing kind of way. And that's often much harder to help people see. The person who's self-willed and arrogant it's not hard to point that out because it's on the surface and it's visible. Yeah. And, you know, you'll have some clear examples of here's a time or a conversation or a way in which this played out. You can see it clearly. Those people, I think, are actually few and far between. I mean, whenever I meet one of those people, I'm like, oh, that's here's a person I can work with because their sin is nice and on the surface and it's right there. All the sort of subtle manifestations of pride, the self-concern, the ways that I exalt myself in my own heart in ways that aren't transparent to people, those are often, they take a deeper level of community for those to really come to the surface and to see, oh, here's what it looks like. Here's how it manifests itself. Here's a way that pride plays out in your life that maybe you don't see. So I just think it's interesting that if it were as easy as like, oh, this person is really arrogant, that's mm-hmm. actually more of a easy conversation to have.
Yeah. Would you say that despair and that fearful pride could also mask itself in like a false humility? I don't exactly know how false humility would look, but I think you could easily skew being humble as well.
False humility is a huge problem. And I think it's not even humility. That's why it's sort of to call it false humility is almost a misnomer because it's really just pride in different clothing. But yeah, that's a huge problem. In fact, I'm pulling up here a resource that we use to develop elders where we talk about fearful pride and sort of we use the language of false humility. Here's some characteristics of fearful pride. Someone who's hesitant to take charge. Someone who's paralyzed by people who disagree and they're always responding to critique. Someone who's overly sensitive and is unwilling to hurt anyone's feelings. Someone who sees other competent people as threats. Someone who's paralyzed by an awareness of their own sins and errors and faults. And so they're so paralyzed by their lack that they lack self-confidence. They lack just courage. Someone who longs to be liked by everyone. Someone who's unwilling to act unless they sort of test the waters first and make sure that everybody is okay with the action they're about to take. Those are all examples of fearful pride because what they're all manifesting is a self-concern, self-protection. Mm. For instance, that last one, I don't want to act unless I already know that everybody's going to be okay. Mm. You know, sort of like that when you were in junior high and I was like, I'm going to ask this girl out, but first of all, I'm going to ask her friend to make sure that she'll say yes if I ask her out, right? It's sort of that what I'm really doing there is I'm protecting my reputation and my name and I'm not going to take a risk if it's going to reflect poorly on me. So those are all manifestations of self-concern and just that sort of more subtle side of, you know, self-protection, self-glory.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about pride versus confidence, or we've sometimes said humble confidence. Let's talk about the difference there, the nuance there that we're trying to get at when we use that phrase humble and confident.
One of my favorite topics.
Yeah.
I do think they're different. And I wrote a blog post on this a few years ago, and the example I used was the movie Hoosiers, which I know is an old movie, but if you're a sports fan, you've probably seen it. And in that movie, you know, it's a basketball movie, and there's this scene where it's down to the final play, and everybody knows who the best player on the team is, and the other team is expecting him to get the ball. And so the coach calls a decoy play and says, hey, everybody knows we're going to go to Jimmy, so instead we're going to give the ball to this other guy, and, you know, we're going to fake the pass to Jimmy, and then we're going to give it to Merle. And there's just sort of this scene in the huddle where everybody gets real quiet. And then Jimmy Chitwood speaks up and says, coach, I'll make it. Like, and really, he's the humblest guy on the team. Like, though he's the best player, his disposition in the movie is that he's very sheepish, shy, and humble. But what he's displaying in that moment is like, I know that I can make this shot. Give me the ball. And no one who watches the movie would say, dude, that guy's proud for asking the ball. Like, you want, in that moment, you're like, I hope that they give the ball to Jimmy because he's going to make the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that in the blog post as just an example of that confidence and pride are different. And if we confuse the two, then what we're saying is that we're killing the very kind of confidence that we want all of our children to grow up with, right? Mm-hmm. This sort of self-confident spirit that, man, I know what the truth is and I know what falsehood is and I know how to act in a particular situation. And I'm confident that God's given me the skills and abilities to do some things well in life. That kind of confidence is not pride. But there can be a fine line between those two things. Mm. And so I think it is important that we distinguish between the two. G.K. Chesterton in his classic way. I'm going to read this quote, and it's one of those quotes that, like, you got to stay with it because he's a dense writer. But here's how he describes it. He says, "What we suffer from today is humility in the wrong place. Modesty has moved from the organ of ambition and settled upon the organ of conviction, where it was never meant to be." So what he's saying is we're meant to be modest about our ambitions, but really what we've become is modest about our convictions. So he goes on to say, "A man was meant to be doubtful about himself, but undoubting about the truth. This has been exactly reversed. The old humility was a spur that prevented a man from stopping, not a nail in his boot that prevented him from going on." Which I think is a great line, right? Humility is a spur that prevents me from stopping. Like, it's pushing me forward, not a nail in my boot that prevents me from going on. And so sometimes the way we talk about humility, especially, I'm concerned about this because especially as we're trying to raise up leaders and help Christians take responsibility for the mission of God, if we insinuate that humility means never being confident that you have the right answer to something, or that you can disciple someone, or that you have skill or wisdom or gifting in a particular area, if we say that humility is never asserting yourself in any of those ways, then we're really saying we're guaranteeing that we'll never have anybody who thinks they're a leader. And that's not what we want. What we want are leaders who have a biblical humility, as G.K. Chesterton says, who are modest about their ambitions, but not modest about their convictions. They're absolutely confident and passionate in their convictions. They're chastened in their ambitions and how they sort of want to live that out in community.
Yeah, there seems to be this sterilized attitude for Christians, at least, when it comes to like being confident in how God has gifted you, or leadership gifts, or whatever it is. Where we're not allowed to talk about that, or be confident in those things because it's not Christian, quote unquote. But what I hear you saying is, no, there's a Christian way to be confident without being prideful and arrogant and sinful.
And I'm also saying, and there's a process of spiritual formation here. Yeah. And so if we want to end up with people who are humble and confident, we have to let them make some mistakes along the way, which means they're either going to be despairing and lack confidence, or they're going to be arrogant and obnoxious. Mm-hmm. But either way, like, let's not kill, you know, let's not defeat either of those. Yeah. Let's chasten them and push them toward the thing they're actually supposed to be developing. So I think you're right. I think that for many Christians, Mike, that because they know pride is a sin, I want to cultivate humility, I'm frustrated by the complexity of that and how long that path seems to be, and, you know, maybe even unaware of how those things manifest themselves in me, there's just sort of this baseline passivity that just says, well, I won't take too many risks. I won't try too much stuff. I won't speak up very often. And I'll just kind of wait for somebody to invite me to something or to tell me to do something, because that way I won't make the mistake of being arrogant, you know, or I won't make the mistake of asserting myself. So I sort of want to open this up for people and just say, hey, pride is a sin. It needs to be repented of, but you're never going to have true awareness of that sin until you make some mistakes and until you're in a community that is honest enough to say, hey, I kind of see this, and can we talk about it? Not in a way that's like smacking you down, but in a way that's redemptive.
Yeah. And I think if you err on the arrogant pride of things, you can channel that and in a few years be a really good leader, you know, cause you already have ambition and conviction and you can screw up a few times. And if you're teachable, that can change the world, man. And if you err more towards the fearful pride of things, you can get in community and get a decent backbone to become humbly confident. And that too can help change the church as well. And so either way, as you repent and become more humble, whichever side of the scale you tip on, all of that is teachable if you'll be taught.
Mm-hmm. So really talking about a community that cultivates humility, that we help one another build that and develop that. Your second question that you sort of already got us to, Mike, how do we spot it?
Mm-hmm.
How do we spot pride? And I think we've already sort of answered that in many ways, but a good sort of diagnostic question is just to ask, where am I most aware of self? Some of us are most aware of self when it comes to, I'm really assertive and aggressive and So I know in a certain situation, I'm just really self-confident in a fleshly way, in a selfish way. Some of us are most aware of self when we're fearful and we're just like, we're in a room full of people and we feel inadequate. And the thing, all that's coming into our minds is just like, what do all these people think of me? Right. So wherever that tends to, whatever side of the spectrum that question tends to reveal, I think it's a good starting point. Is just where and when am I most aware of self and most sort of cognizant of me and most wanting me to be seen in a certain light or respected in a certain way? That's probably a good starting point for how to spot pride.
How do we then pursue humility?
The first answer is the worship of God. Because if pride is placing myself above God, if it's self-exaltation, the answer to that is putting God in his rightful place. The Bible calls it the fear of God. Hmm. And it's the reason that Proverbs says the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Because when I see God and honor God as God, it begins to kill pride. Because there's no room for self-exaltation when I'm seeing and honoring and worshiping God rightly. So I think that's the pursuit. And that's a heart level, devotion level answer to that question, which is why I like it. Cause I think we get consumed with like, well, what can I tweak, you know, to cultivate humility? I'm like, well, do you love God? Do you worship God? Do you fear God? That's the starting point. Mm-hmm. And the more that you're doing that and pursuing that and cultivating that, the more you're going to see pride shrivel up. So there are some other answers, but I think we have to start with worship. There's, that classic line that a lot of preachers use, you know, pride or humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Right. And I think that's true. That's a good way of framing it, that humility is not like a self-loathing, self-deprecation. It's a, I'm just not, a humble person. When you're in the presence of a humble person, I think it's Tim Keller who said this, when you're in the presence of a humble person, you don't really recognize them as humble. You just recognize them as really interesting and interested in you and a good conversationalist. Mm-hmm. And you know why they come off that way? Because they're not thinking about how to be humble in that moment. They just are. And the way that manifests itself is they're just really interested in you, and they're an engaging, selfless kind of person to talk to.
It's interesting that you used Proverbs, because only a wise person wants to grow out of their pride and into humility. And then the more you worship God, the more you're going back to what we were talking about earlier, the more your eyes have to be lifted off of yourself, and onto God. And I think, Mike, to your question, what do you do about it? The first thing that you, when you see it and spot it, you can also insert some things. So in addition to worshiping Christ alone, you need to remind yourself that if you are a Christian, you're saved by grace and you actually did nothing. And so you actually have nothing to boast about. And you can also train yourself in certain circumstances. So if you're in rooms of people and you tend to be fearful, like Bob was talking about, and you tend to measure yourself right away in the presence of other people, you can start cultivating a sense of confidence among those people and really, and even possibly share with them that fear in that moment, right? If it's safe, good people and godly people. And then in an arrogant situation, arrogant, prideful situation, you can also bite your tongue more and just not expect to be in control and not expect to dominate and not expect to know all the answers. So there are certain disciplines that you could insert into your life as well.
It's interesting to think about the answer to despair being humility. Because I think a lot of people who are despairing, and I'm thinking here particularly of Christians who just are highly aware of their sin and feel like they don't measure up and they're not good Christians, they're not very obedient to God and blah, blah, blah. They I think, can justify that as humility. It feels like I'm humble. But actually, that's when I begin to see, no, despair is just the other side of pride. And what I'm doing is I'm consumed with myself and how I measure up to God's standard. Humility is to look to Christ. And this is Robert Murray McShane, his famous line was, for every one look at your sin, take 10 looks at Christ, right? Like humility is, I'm not aware of myself and my sin as much as I'm aware of God and his goodness to me in Christ. And so to see humility as the answer to despair, I think just puts different lenses on it for some people. Cause I think people can get despairing and feel like, I don't know what to do about this. And, it's interesting to think of the answer being, well, how about we cultivate the virtue of humility? How about thinking of yourself less? How about more of an emphasis on God and his goodness in Christ and the free riches of the gospel that are yours in Christ? In his classic way, Peter Kraft says it this way. He says, if you think about Jesus' metaphor for humility, he tells us to become like children, right? The kingdom of heaven is entered like a little child. And Kraft, he has a brilliant way of doing this. So he puts this spin on it. He says, think about what the word adult means in our culture. What is an adult book? What is an adult movie, right? Those are words that connote vice, right? Childlikeness is virtue because it's innocence, it's humility, it's dependence, it's neediness. And all of that is the root of humility. If I'm dependent on God, if I know that I need God, if I'm aware of my lack and my limitation and my weakness, that's the beginnings of humility. And so Kraft just says that the metaphor, the clear answer that Jesus gives is, well, you need to be more childlike. That's the path to humility. So stop being so grown up and start becoming more like a child. That's really what humility looks like. It's at its root a state of dependence and a state of weakness and a state of neediness. And again, not in a self-loathing kind of way, but in just an on the same way your kids are both the most brash and sort of confident people, but in a really innocent and childlike and dependent way, right? Like they don't worry about waking up in the middle of the night and telling you that they had a bad dream. They don't care because they're needy and they're not thinking about, is this a good time to wake Dad up or not? They're kids and they're going to express their neediness and their dependence. And we see that as welcome because we love them and we recognize the beauty of that sort of childlike faith.
Well, thanks gentlemen for embarking on this 7-episode journey of the deadly sins.
This is the best podcast we've ever done. ever.
Chris Hemmelman, we miss you. Come back to us soon. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or any other way possible. And join us again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.